Hi, this is Damon Pastolka, host of The Faces of Business, where I talk with interesting people sharing life and business experiences to entertain, engage, build community, and provide information to help others succeed. If you're interested in learning more about one of our guests or how we are helping business owners generate wealth and build businesses they can sell or succeed at Exit Your Way, you can find more information on our website, exityourway.com, or by contacting me directly, damon@exityourway.com. I hope you enjoy the show. All right, everyone, welcome once again to The Faces of Business. I am your host, Damon Pastolka, and we are happy to have with us today, Kevin Mulcahy from Assumptions Matter. We're going to be talking about the evolving workplace. Kevin, how are you doing today?
I am doing excellently, Damon, excellently.
Good, good, good. Well, Kevin, let's get going here today. Let's start talking about, as we always do, let's talk about your background and how you got into what you're doing today.
Okay. So what I'm in the business of doing today is advising executives on how to make better business decisions. Because at the end of the day, that's what we as executives do. And the better decision you make, the better your business will tend to perform. Mm-hmm. So I got into that initially through management consulting. And from management consulting, you go into corporate strategy. So I joined Sprint in their department of corporate strategy. So you're advising the senior executives on trends that they need to anticipate and take advantage of. And post Sprint, I purchased a set of assets from Sprint. I mean, you can be an advisor to executives all you want, and you can ask. I always thought, well, if it were my business, I'd do X or I'd do Y. And then one day the opportunity for it to be my business presented itself. And I bought a set of assets, telecom assets from France Telecom, and entered into business myself. And so over time, I was the CEO of a business with operations in 6 different countries.
Uh-huh.
We spoke 4 different languages.
Wow.
I don't advise this for anyone at home.
Yeah.
Anyone listening.
Yeah, no doubt.
And a business that was 90% customers outside the US. And so we scaled, we scaled that business and had to migrate that business through almost moving every customer from a legacy product up to a new product. So that was my first taste of being a CEO and being dropped into the deep end of the evolution from business strategy to business operations. And it's wonderful and easy when you're on the strategy side and it's 2x2 matrices. But once you get to the sharp end of implementation, and you realize that business lives and dies by cash flow, and your strategy is fundamentally to build the most profitable and repeatable stream of cash flow that you can build. And there's a few ways to do that. One, you've got to be meticulous on your I'll go on sales, not necessarily on marketing. Marketing is just awareness. Sales is asking for the order. And two, on the employee experience and on the people side of the business. And that was a subsequent business in a book that I wrote on the employee experience specifically, because if you don't engage employees' heart and mind, you don't have a sustainable business.
Yeah.
And then the third one was really, once you had sales and once you had people, you got to focus on the cash and building a culture of cash. And does everybody understand the difference between cash flow and profitability? And so we can dive into that. But to me, everybody was looking at our P&L and making decisions based on the P&L. And to me, the P&L is nothing more than promises made minus promises made to you minus promises you made to other people. And in theory, when you net out all those promises, in theory, that's how much profit you'll have.
Mm-hmm.
And businesses, I mean, that's interesting, but you frankly can't run a business on the P&L. You can't. You shouldn't. And we can dive into that. You run a business on the cash flow, and you run a business on the level of employee engagement with that business and on the level of customer engagement with your business. And if you get those three things right, you're booming.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're right, because cash flow can be a challenge in growth. And that's, I tell you, when you get into an extreme growth company, cash, you can just scratch your head, because you can say we are growing so fast and our P&L says we are making so much money, but I have zero cash in the bank. And if you're not watching cash flow, it's a hard thing for people to swallow, because if you're aggressively growing, you can go a long time with very little cash and watching the value of your business increase, watching the everything else is increasing and doing as it should, but you got I'm cash poor basically. I like your idea, your concept of talking about cash flow management, because when you manage the cash flow, you're intelligently growing your business. Because I've got a specific example where you had a customer a number of years ago here that was in e-commerce, and they imported products that were manufactured for them and resold them. And the owner looked at me, and we had doubled plus their business, and said, "We're making all this money. Why don't I have any money?" Well, the owner, while we were helping him to manage cash flow, he had an affinity to buy on habit rather than buy on need. And I said, "Well, it's because your inventory went up by $3 million or $4 million. I can't remember how many millions of dollars the inventory went up. Those are just dollars sitting out there on the racks. Those are dollars sitting on the racks. And you got so much that you had to rent another space to put even more of that inventory that's just sitting on the racks." And it's scary how that can happen, and scary how also, if you're not managing to the cash flow, that if the market turns, I'm then stuck with that cash in assets that I can't turn into cash.
Yeah. And I've never met a business yet that ran out of business because they were unprofitable. But every business I ever met that didn't make it, they ran out of cash, not because they ran out of profitability. And you realize, look, depreciation is the difference. And so now I coach business leaders on how to make people decisions and how to make business decisions, and really how to lead their management team through a culture of cash and all the elements of a culture of cash, because that's what makes the difference, makes or breaks a business. And if you get everybody aware and engaged and acting on cash flow, then that shapes culture. Mm-hmm. And you build a culture of cash. And culture is fundamentally two things to me. One, it's how we do things around here. But secondly, it's what are we going to fire people for? Like, your culture is the worst behavior that you tolerate. And when you frame it like that, and you say, look, here's what we're not tolerating in the culture of cash, and we can make business decisions once that cost us some cash, but if we start repeating those cash punitive decisions, then somebody's getting fired around here. And we have to take your cash flow very, very seriously in a business. And there's always ways to, everything's negotiable in a business. When, mm-hmm. how much people pay, when they pay, who's going to pay. Everything is negotiable. And the smarter, I mean, fundamentally, every business is a cash generating machine. We sell to different people. We sell different products. We sell in different geographies. But we do it all. All of our businesses have one thing in common. We keep our score in, or we ought to keep our score in positive cash flow and cash accumulated into the business.
Mm-hmm.
And cash is what we use to fund our initiatives. And cash is what we use to engage our employees. And cash is what we use to build our outreach to the right types of customers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as you got into business, and you know, because you were working for some bigger companies and you were doing some international things there, what really got you thinking about, hey, I need to buy a business, I need to try this and do it out on my own rather than continuing to work for the corporations?
Well, part of it is an initial aptitude. You have to have the desire to want to take on a business in the first place. So you have to be aware and going, yes, I'm interested in being a CEO or leading a business as an entrepreneur. And you start to open your eyes to where could or might those opportunities be. And to be ready for, you can either generate opportunities or you can, but the other part that happens, I think, to a lot of people is opportunities show up whether we're ready or not. And that's, to me, the nature of an opportunity is it presents itself. And do you feel you're ready? And none of us are ever ready often for the opportunities that present ourselves. So the second question we have to ask ourselves then, and I think this real bar is, yes, but I'm ready enough to take this on. And I'm ready enough now. You'll never be perfectly ready. And you just have to feel like you're ready enough and you jump right in. And you learn it as you go. Mm-hmm. And as long as you can frame for others what the priorities are and recruit a team around those priorities, the business has a shot.
Yeah.
And I think the opportunity that presented to me was a telecom, France Telecom was the business. They were offloading some assets and I was working at Sprint and they were asking Sprint if Sprint wanted those assets. And Sprint said they didn't want the assets. And I was looking at these assets going, you know, these assets were being managed one way when you're the tail of a multi-billion dollar dog, but in the hands of somebody who would just be dedicated to just that part of the business, you'd make some different decisions.
Yeah.
If you're not wearing the France Telecom brand, and by itself, is the business of this business viable? And are there some decisions that could be made differently in this business to make it a higher growth business?
Okay.
And you just have to see opportunity where others don't.
Yeah.
And that's how I got into that first business. And
nice. So you talk about a culture of cash, culture of cash flow. So give me a couple examples of different decisions based on a culture of cash flow.
Okay.
Regular business, we do it one way, but when you're really thinking about cash flow, you're thinking of it this way.
All right. So one is, if you think about how well do we manage our cash flows, right? And let's just break it down into the aspects of the business. So with customers, do we have a process in place, for example, for how customers pay, whether they're, there's always an opportunity to get customers to prepay or put deposits down or What's often overlooked is the opportunity to periodically review and raise prices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one decision that businesses are particularly poor on is they don't have an organized process to raise prices, be it on a, we're going to do this on the 31st of March every year, or are we going to do it depending on sniffing in the wind, or are we doing it based on some semblance of feedback from what's going on in our marketplace? But if you don't have a discipline on raising prices, your costs will keep going, but you can't, mm-hmm. you get caught up. You start, your margin starts eroding. And then clarity of what exactly are you charging for, and are you charging for everything you could be charging for? Let's look at I often think of the role as CEO as Chief Extraction Officer. That's what I think it stands for. And the role of a CEO in a growing business is to extract as close to the amount of value that we generate for our customers as possible. If you're underpricing, you're leaving a lot of value on the table. If mm-hmm. you're overpricing, you won't get as many orders as you could.
Yeah.
So there's this, you have to be an chief extraction officer. How do we find the customers that value our services the most and price as close to the value that we're delivering as we can? And when we do that and we find those segments and those niches and we lock those people in, then we have a cash generating machine.
Mm-hmm.
If we do that poorly, we're throwing darts. We have a haphazard business. We find ourselves constantly playing with our pricing to find the right pricing. It's like, it's not about finding the right pricing. It's about finding that customer who values you the most. And we have to be willing to keep testing who are the customers that value us the most.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big one on customers. On suppliers, do we ask our suppliers to moderate their cash flow a little bit with us? Look, we pay you net. Can we pay you net 45 instead of net 30? Can we pay you net 60 instead of net 45? Can we, just change regularly the speed at which we pay suppliers, or can we get volume discounts from our suppliers? Most suppliers, when asked by a customer for a deal, will do it. We're asked ourselves, and our customers come to us and say, "Hey, I'll buy more if." Then we'll generally say yes, but we don't do the same as much with our suppliers,
mm-hmm.
and I think we don't revisit our suppliers enough and make enough asks of our suppliers to support our business.
Mm-hmm.
I've again yet to meet a business, and you alluded it to earlier, that is not, and I know post-COVID it's difficult, but inventory management is a hidden trap for cash.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I understand there's some strategic reasons to stockpile certain parts of inventory. During COVID, the supply chains were busted. But mm-hmm. the moment you see that a supply chain is working, we have to bring back the discipline that we lost during COVID for hoarding those nuts like little squirrels,
mm-hmm.
and trying to rebalance our inventory management again.
Yeah.
And oftentimes we forget that people are inventory as well. We have to look at the utilization of our people. And mm-hmm. If you're a service business, your people are your inventory. If you're a service business and you're not talking about people utilization, you're not talking about one of the fundamentals of the business. And I think overall, human capital management is a big area, and we're often quick to hire and slow to fire. And I think we have to be slower to hire and quicker to fire.
Mm-hmm.
And most people in a business will know who's an underperformer. They know who the underperformers are, and they're waiting for management to take action. And don't for a moment believe that your people can't see where a poor performer isn't being addressed. Mm-hmm. And there's a little contagion that happens there. When a poor performer is allowed to perform poorly over time, other people's care and concern for the business starts to erode. It is that old case of the rotten apple in the barrel will eventually turn all the apples rotten.
Mm-hmm.
And the apples didn't want to be rotten, but it's just infectious. And if you're tolerating, you get the worst behavior that you tolerate. And that's back to culture. What behaviors mm-hmm. are you tolerating? What are we promoting for? And what are we firing for? And then how are we engaging the people that we want to keep on board? I'll say one of the most underused words in HR, and I've written a book called The Future Workplace Experience. And one of the underused words in improving the experience with employees is the word thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And not just in verbal form, like Stephen, thank you for your work, or Sheila, thank you for your work, but a thank you note. The most senior executives, when I ask them about their practices as a senior executive, a constant hidden practice of senior executives, of the most senior of senior executives, the most impressive ones, is they carve aside about a certain amount of time every day or week where they're writing handwritten thank you notes to key influencers or stakeholders mm-hmm. of their success and in their business. And they don't really talk about it. They don't really write about it, but it's one of those hidden habits that I have observed executives doing up front. I have received from an executive, and I've coached rising executives on doing that. And when employees receive a written thank you, these are the types of things that people keep. They bring it back. They show that their folks at home.
Yeah.
Like, look what I got. And those are the types of things that are kept, while the verbal thank you is echoed there for a few minutes and then forgotten. The written thank you is often stored in a drawer. People
stay a lot longer.
People are slow to throw out their thank you notes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
So I think that's one of those, like, business practices don't all have to be hard. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with the experience of employees, at the end of the day, there's a few drivers or components of the employee experience. And this is what I've done a lot of research on. But I wanted to talk about the culture of cash first,
mm-hmm.
because yes, business is about the cash flow, but you can accelerate that cash flow if you make the employee experience better. And there's a number of drivers of employee experience. One is, and I think the most important one is the emotional component. And that is, to what extent do you connect the employee to the purpose of the business or to the mission of the business? And to what extent do they understand what the business is all about? And how do you hire for people that care about the purpose of the business and the mission of the business? The second one is cultural. And here's how we do things around here. Here's the behaviors that we want to see. And those are the ones that we put on our wall. We're innovative, we're collaborative, we're X, we're Y, we're Z. But also, here's what we don't tolerate. And I think we spend a lot of time talking about the aspirational behaviors, but what do we actually promote for? And also, what do we fire for? And it's great to be aspirational, but if you catch me doing it right, acknowledge it and promote me for it or reward me for it. And if you catch me doing it wrong, correct me. And if you catch me doing it, people doing it wrong frequently, remove them.
Yes.
Because it sends a message on what behaviors you'll tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's technological. What are the tools that you expect us to deliver positive cash flow or to deliver on this business? And in the research on the employee experience, and what COVID bought out was we got introduced to a whole set of new tools. Slack and Teams, yeah. And many, many different tools. People are hunting around platforms now looking for that message from ABC,
yeah,
about what WXY. And in talking with companies, the number one issue with the tools, it's not, and this goes back to the old carpenter side, it's not the quality of the tool necessarily, it's your skill in using the tool. And what companies have underfunded, and anyone listening should just think about this, do the employees know how to use the tool that you're asking them to use? And just because you dictate that Teams or Slack is how we're doing things, not everybody is programmed to pick up and converse and engage in the way that that tool dictates. And just be kind, and you can't overtrain people on the tools. And if you really want people to use a tool, don't be expecting them to figure out themselves over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them will do that, but you've got to spend the time on, we're training to use this tool, and you cannot overtrain people on the fundamental tools that drive your business.
That's a great, and that point has come up with us in the last year with people really not understanding how to use some of these tools. I mean, you mentioned Teams, and you look at Slack and all these other ways, and security concerns. How do we share information? How do we, it's just simple file sharing even becomes a completely different thing when you have multiple tools that you could do it. I can do it by email. I can do it by Slack. I can do it by Teams. I could, just so many other things. And then, as you said, people are using these tools, and the vast majority, I believe, of people want to get to know it well enough just to do what they need to do,
yep,
and stop there. And they miss out on the opportunity of, if I learned a bit more about it, it could help me a lot more. But I'm busy, so I learn what I need, and that's it.
Yep. I think the most effective training sometimes is when our peers train us. And
yes,
one of the other elements is the intellectual part of employee experience. And people used to think about your employees as learners. And I'm going to suggest that you're missing a big element there. If you just think about hiring learners, or you keep valuing learners, you're being incomplete. You also want to hire people to be teachers. So you have to be a learner and a teacher. And if you want your business to scale, it can only scale if employees teach others on how to do things, just as you just pointed out with that example about people will learn a tool to get their job done. But if you have people around, but you'll also learn a tool based on the energy and motivation and how well people around you are using them. And if you see people using a tool just a bit better than someone else or a bit more expertly than someone else, regardless of their level, great employees are teachers. Because to teach something, you got to know something.
Mm-hmm.
And peers, teaching peers, is an area where, as we have a flatter organization and we've cut some corners on teaching and learning during COVID and post-COVID, finding the people who know most, who are the best at doing something or better at doing something, and giving them some of the time to teach others will be more effective than bringing in the quote-unquote workshop guru.
Mm-hmm.
And just making that part of people's expectations. You can't scale up a company if everybody doesn't have the expectation that not only are they responsible for their own development, but they're responsible for the development of those around them. And if you don't have a, here's what I expect you to teach others as part of their performance expectations, then you're putting an obstacle in your scale-up plans, because mm-hmm. everybody's just going to learn what they need to do their job and get their ratings. And we have to have a component in our performance reviews that's on how well and how much have you contributed to teaching others and coaching and upskilling others. And at the end of the day, we can only scale up if we all scale up. It's the rising tide.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't keep carrying specialists. Everybody has to grow here. And we have to have a methodology and be a great learning organization as well mm-hmm. as a selling organization. And that's where the HR part comes in. And we screen for learners. We don't screen for teachers. And I always go deeper on anytime you see somebody who coaches their local volleyball team or football team or women's basketball team, or if they're coaching something, teaching something, doing Boy Scouts, something, pay extra attention to those people because they have a natural orientation towards upskilling others.
Mm-hmm.
And screen for that in your interviews and look for that and promote that and encourage that. And make sure that when you hire somebody who does that, work with them on their hours so they can keep being a great coach in whatever they're coaching on or doing, because that makes them a better employee mm-hmm. and a better learner at work and teacher at work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, great stuff there. Because you're right. It is the organizations that develop the best people. Not hiring is important, but you're always going to have to continue to develop once you hire. And the organizations that develop the best people, that intentionally develop people, that really think about how we're going to develop people, including teaching and, you know, making sure that people are receptive to learning that you're hiring. And but the ones that do that are the ones that can continue to generate success over time, because we're adaptive, we're creative, when we find better solutions.
Yeah. Every employee should be asked, what is it that in your annual performance, your periodic performance review, as we're moving away from annual performance review, mm-hmm. for your periodic performance review, I always want to have a component in there for what is it that you're doing to upskill or train others in our organization. And that's how we scale up. When the people internally teach others, and that's part of our quote unquote culture of learning and culture of scaling.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we do it. And we need to make room for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Great points there. Great points. So as we're looking at this, the future workplace and the future workplace experience and the book that you wrote there, really, what are you thinking that the future holds for the most successful workplaces?
The future is how are we creating the best experience at work? And we're in the experience economy now, and our employees are, you know, everything that they touch outside of work is offering them better and better experiences, yep. right? Their restaurants, their apps, their help desks, whatever they're touching, is a higher experience than it was 2 to 3 years ago. QR codes at restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. So my number one issue is pay attention to the experience of the employees at work. What is the experience of working here? And asking that question. And ways to flesh that out are one, to ask, go around and ask every employee, what is it that you would tell a new prospect on why they should work here? And listening to those answers, why should anyone work here? What would you tell a friend on why they should work here? And by just asking that informally, you will gather what is the quote unquote secret sauce, that this is from the mouths of the babes, right? Mm-hmm. This is what they would say is why they would recommend someone to work here. And two, asking them, what is the experience of working here? What do you like about that experience? And what could be improved about working here? And these are what they call the employee attitude surveys. And you don't have to fix everything, but you should just ask what's working, what's not working, what could we do? What would you like to see us improve? And the first item that employees want to see is, it's not that you're doing something about it, is that you've at least heard it. So you can say, look, we've asked you, we've heard you, here's what we've heard. Now, based on what we've heard, here's the two or three things that we're going to tackle this quarter or next quarter. Mm-hmm. And here's one or two items we just can't tackle. We've heard it, we know it's there, but we're not in a position to tackle that at this time. And number one, people want to be heard. Number two, obviously, they want you to do something about it. But to be heard is to be believed. And oftentimes I ask folks, well, when's the last time you did an employee attitude survey? And they're like, well, we suspended doing that during COVID because those results weren't going to be valid. And I was like, those are the times you want to hear the most. It's not mm-hmm. whether it's valid if an employee provides their opinion and they were asked. That's what makes it valid. And just be honest about what you can tackle on. And just say, look, how can we make working here a better experience? And it is a negotiation. I think we're, and you'll read in the media, the priorities of people, and I'm going to say workers post-COVID, have shifted in some ways. They say it takes 6 months to build a habit. And we had people working remotely for 18 months.
Yeah.
Or 24 months. They have built habits, and those some of those habits have been entrenched. And then the companies then have said, hey, we want you to go back to your habits of 2 years ago. I don't remember how I was working 2 years ago. I just remember how I was working in the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And take the best of that and remove the worst of that. And we're seeing a tension now, and I'll call it these cultural disconnects, about it's an opportunity to post-COVID, and we're almost not referring to post-COVID anymore because COVID is quote-unquote, I won't say ended, but it's in the rearview mirror, and it's getting fainter and fainter in the rearview mirror, even though I keep hearing about new cases. There are not many. We need to say, how do we want to do business going forward? What have we learned, and what practices worked for us? And what practices do we envision will continue to work for us? And one practice that is working for companies right now is, I'm going to call this a roses and thorns and buds conversation with managers. During COVID and post-COVID, we spent a lot of time on Zoom calls, running through our agendas. First of all, we all got better at written agendas. We all got better at meeting agendas and got better at tighter agendas. So that was a big plus. We got to run some meetings. But what we lost was that gray space in between meetings of, hey, Damon, three questions for you. You know, how are you, Damon? And sharing a little bit about how I am. And then, Damon, how are we? How are we getting on with together? Like, how are you finding our working relationship? And this asking how are we is a big focus on engaging the employees more emotionally. Just how are we? And secondly, these thorns, roses, and buds, very simple check-ins where you just, you're going to ask those three questions and shut up and take 30 minutes. And what are your thorns right now? Like, what's not working out very well or causing you anxiety or pain? And you'll find, I speculate, that half of it will be work issues and half of it will be issues outside of work. And then what are those buds? What are you working on that's bringing you some joy, some hope, some growth, some where the sun is rising? And so again, some of those are like, yeah, this project's going well. And, you know, got the new home and that's going well. And the wife's having a baby and that's going well. My husband's changed roles. That's going well. Those are the buds. So you have the thorns, the roses. And then what are you working on that could blossom, but you're not sure if they're going to blossom? And where you could use some help or push or watering on those new initiatives. Those are the buds. And if you listen to those three things, you'll have in a nutshell, just those three questions. And your guideline is 30-minute conversation. You get to ask those three questions and maybe a one or two follow-ups on each one. You'll learn more about the putting your finger on the pulse of that employee than any other survey or anything else. And it just gives you a, hey, any new thorns, any new buds? What's going on with roses? Once you do it once, you got shorthand. What's going on in the thorns? And then you bring it, you don't structure it for the business. It's just what's going on in their lives. And then you start bringing that into the, hey, let's talk about business thorns and personal thorns, business roses, personal roses, business buds, personal buds. And what we need to get back to is reconnecting with our employees on a more humane level and doing a lot at one of the hardest executive skills and leader skills is, especially when a growth business is growing, is listening versus telling. And back to just listening for what is the pulse of our employees. And as well as we listen to the pulse of our customers and putting our finger there and just believing our employees when they say things and seeing what we can address. And that's where what I'm dealing with a lot right now is helping executives open up some conversations about with their employees on issues that employees raise and just being a listening post for what some of those concerns are and then expanding those concerns, steering them towards the needs of the business. So what are you trying to accomplish personally, Damon, in your life? And how can we, how does the, in your role, what are the activities that help you do that more, and what gets in your way of doing that we might want to pass those responsibilities on to someone else? But it's another way of saying, what do you love most about your job and what do you like least about your job? And believing them and seeing if you can address any of that. I mean, we have employees who just now respect people. They're starving to be heard and mm-hmm. understood and believed and listened to. And this is hard when we're trying to scale up, and we're trying to scale up fast. And I think to net it out is in scaling up, let's try to, what helps people is, how do we implement and document our processes for scaling up? The more processes we have, and the more explicit we are in what customers we will not serve and who we will serve, the better and faster we're going to scale up. Mm-hmm. And the most productive exercise I do with employees is I call it it's a reverse bracket, and I call it a deselection bracket. And we just put 8 slots on the board, just like a regular basketball bracket. We've all looked at them. Mm-hmm. 8 slots to 4 slots, 4 slots to 2, and then there's a winner. And it's called, write down 8 things you wish we weren't doing as a company. 8 things that are creating economic pain, labor pain, emotional pain, frustration, their legacy issues. I don't know why we tolerate this customer, or why we're expanding into this market, or what's causing pain. Mm-hmm. And it's just write them randomly on the bracket, and now let's go A versus B, B versus C, and have a winner, and bring the bracket to for it. Stop doing it would free up emotion, would free up cash, would free up energy, would free up just relief and or money. And you run everybody through the brackets, and you say, we will commit to stop whatever gets through that bracket and stop it. Because you can't start doing new things until you stop doing some of the old things. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard as a scale up business to stop doing things, because everything we're doing got us to where we are today, but not everything we're doing will get us to where we want to go tomorrow.
Yeah.
So you got to stop doing some things in order to keep going and keep focusing.
Yeah.
And when employees are asked what they want to stop and are engaged in the process of activities to stop and believed on, this should be stopped, this customer is just way too much trouble, can we please just fire this customer? We're getting no margins, mm-hmm. causes extreme pain, blah, blah, blah. And when employees see that management is listening, and by the way, management has a big incentive to stop things that are causing pain for employees, mm-hmm. then you'll have a smoother business. And
yeah.
And many businesses I've seen, the economy is not expected to be strong over the next 6 months. And this is a good time to decide now, what can you stop that's taking excess energy, excess capital, not getting the return, so that you can focus on doing more of the things that are giving you the most returns and the most mm-hmm. profitability and the most positive benefits. So
yep.
That's where the employee experience matches in with the cash flow experience, or yeah. the culture of cash.
Wow, this is awesome, Kevin, because you really hit it on the head when you talked about what we moved into is the experience economy, and how as employers, we really need to make working in a company a better experience. I mean, for a myriad of reasons, happier people are more productive, people that are having a better experience are more creative, and will help us do what we need to do in the businesses a lot more effectively and efficiently. But it is much easier to retain employees that are having a good experience in the current condition. That's a very difficult hiring situation for many right now. This is so key in this, to really focus on that. And the simple things that you said, why would someone want to work here?
What's the experience working here? What would you improve about working here? Just some simple things. And then when you talked about at the end there, close to the end there, when you're talking about the thorns, the roses, and buds, and how to start a conversation, you think three words to start very meaningful conversations with people in your business. Just because those meaningful conversations then allow you to hear the people, as you mentioned when you were talking about the experience economy and how important that is to be heard, and then also to be able to provide some action behind it if it's appropriately able to do it. Just so much good stuff there. So much good stuff. We're already up to time, and I can't believe it, because we're just getting into the surface of this, and such a pleasure to learn from you today and really understand all the way. I mean, we started talking about cash flow of all things, but we ended up with the experience economy and how to really, you know, for managers, a lot of keys in this, and people came into this late, they should be going back to the beginning. There's a lot of things for managers and leaders in here. There's a lot of things. You're talking about investing in teaching employees and employees that want to learn, and the importance of how everyone, as we improve our skills, we all rise if we're teaching and building good people in our organization. To at the end here, talking about the experience economy and how we need to make it better for employees and customers. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for being here today, Kevin.
You're welcome, Damon. And I love the work that you do, and just, you've got a new listener in me on your podcasts, and you just got great nuggets in every podcast. So appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much for being here. So Kevin, if people want to talk to you, what's the best way to get a hold of you? I always want to make sure we do that.
Yeah. You can find me on kevinmulcahy.com, which is more about the book. And yeah, I do a lot of HR workshops there, and I'm always open to connecting with people on LinkedIn.
Just all right.
Kevin Mulcahy. Kevin Mulcahy, right, on LinkedIn.
Yes.
And happy to talk
Kevin
about
Kevin Mulcahy. That's Mulcahy. So people get it spelled right.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for being here today, everyone. Thanks to Dion for the comments in there, Yassine for the comments in there, and all the other listeners that are listening and not commenting, but listening anyway. And like I said before, rewind this thing to the back if you didn't hear him from beginning to end, because he's got a lot of good leadership nuggets in here, and then coming into experience economy at the end, and so many good things. Kevin, thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Damon.
Have a great day, everyone. We'll be back.